the Deco Retro program here on Planet FM. We will bring you interesting interviews, updates of future deco, modern, retro, and other related events. Also the stories that celebrate New Zealand's history and its people, as well as book reviews and other snippets capturing the glamour and fascination of a bygone era.
Deco Retro, Deco Retro.
Good afternoon, listeners. Today's program is about events that have taken place in New Zealand over the Christmas period, including letters children have sent to Father Christmas. Every year when Christmas comes around, I am reminded of the excitement I felt as a child, anticipating the big day and wondering what presents I would find under the Christmas tree. On Christmas Eve, my parents would leave a bottle of beer and a fruit mince pie for Father Christmas as a thank you for the presents we hoped he would leave us. That night, when it was time to go to bed, I could barely contain my excitement, trying to imagine what presents Santa would leave for me. Sometimes, when I heard the hall stairs creak in the dead of night, I had a sneaky suspicion that it was Dad creeping down the stairs to drink Santa's beer and scoff the mince pie. But no matter how hard I tried to stay awake, I never did catch Dad out. In my somnolent state, I soon fell blissfully back to sleep. I just hoped that Father Christmas had taken note of presents I requested in the letter I sent him, in particular the Noddy books by Enid Blyton. Fingers crossed. Children have been writing letters to Father Christmas since time immemorial. But letters written by children today are likely to contain requests for such items as PlayStations, iPods, and mobile phones. It was a different story in 1913 when 8-year-old Edna Crompton wrote this missive to the North Pole. Dear Father Christmas, please will you bring me the list which I write down, and the ones that I tick, you must be sure to bring. 1. A thumb Bible. Tick. 2. A doll's head. Tick. 3. A box of good paints. Tick. 4. A nice picture book. Tick. 5. A small doll's house. Tick. 6. Some oranges, apples, and nuts. Tick. A box of chocolates. Tick. A good notebook. Not ticked. A pretty money box. Ticked. A toy. Ticked. Now I must close. A loving friend, Edna. Oh, don't bring any German things. Top of Edna's list was a thumb Bible, a miniature abridged version of the Bible popular with children and collectors. Advances in typesetting, lithography, and photographic reproduction made making tiny books like this possible during the Victorian age, and they reached the height of their popularity around the turn of the century. Perhaps the most poignant aspect of the letter is the postscript, "Don't bring German things." With the outbreak of the First World War just 8 months away, the war clouds gathering over Europe had obviously had an impact on the young girl, at the time living in St. Helens, Lancashire, in the north of England. When her father, William Crompton, was called up to serve after the outbreak of war in 1914, Edna and her mother, Evelyn, brother Alfred, and sister Rhoda were forced to leave their home and live with distant relatives. Although William survived the war, one of Edna's uncles was killed in the Somme in 1916. Edna emigrated to New Zealand in 1977 and lived in Lowry Bay, Wellington, until her death at the age of 92. Edna's daughter, Wellington journalist Judy Bradwell, found the letter when sorting through papers after her mother's death. I would like to mention two important events that occurred in New Zealand in 1953. Queen Elizabeth II's Christmas at Government House in Auckland and the Tangawai disaster. But first, the Tangawai disaster. The Tangawai disaster threatened to overshadow the visit of the young Queen Elizabeth II to New Zealand, the first ever by a ruling monarch to this country. The Queen and the Duke of Edinburgh spent Christmas 1953 at the then Government House, now the Staff Common Room at the University of Auckland. The royal couple had arrived in New Zealand by sea 2 days earlier and were preparing to tour the country. Their visit was met with almost hysterical adulation, with massive crowds turning out to see the new monarch, crowned just 6 months earlier. It was estimated that 2 out of every 3 New Zealanders, out of a population of around 2 million, saw the Queen during her 5-week tour. The monarch's Christmas Day began with Holy Communion at the private chapel of the Bishop of Auckland, before a return to Government House, where she and the Duke were serenaded with carols by the Friendly Road Children's Choir. Then Santa arrived, his sleigh drawn by a team of Shetland ponies, with gifts for the royal couple and their children, Prince Charles, then aged 5, and Princess Anne, 3. Who had been left behind in England during the Southern Hemisphere tour. There was a train set for Prince Charles and a doll's wardrobe for Princess Anne. The Queen was presented with a diamond-studded fern-leaf brooch by Lady Allum on behalf of the women of Auckland, and the Duke of Edinburgh received a gold pen and pencil set. The royal couple then attended another service at the Cathedral of St. Mary in Parnell, before a traditional lunch at Government House and a sightseeing drive around Auckland's suburbs. In the evening, the Queen made her first annual Christmas broadcast from Government House. The only time she had given the broadcast from outside the United Kingdom, departing from her original script at the end to make reference to the Tangawai disaster and express her condolences. Now, just to let you know a little bit about the Tangawai disaster. At 3 p.m. on Christmas Eve 1953, the Daily Express from Wellington to Auckland headed off from the capital, laden with 285 passengers, setting out on their annual holidays. Little did they or the train driver know that at 10:21 p.m. it would plummet into the flooded Whangaahu River at Tangiwai after a bridge weakened by the passing of a volcanic lahar collapsed beneath the train's weight. The lahar, a mass of water, ice and mud from the crater lake of Mount Ruapehu, had flowed down the path of the river about 30 minutes before the train arrived. The wave of water, estimated to be around 6 meters high, took out the large concrete piers and steel girders of the Tangiwai Bridge, leaving only the railway tracks remaining in place. When the engine pulling 9 passengers and 2 vans, reached the river. The rails simply buckled. In total, 151 people were killed in the accident. At the time, New Zealand's 4th worst disaster, after the wreck of the Orpheus in 1861, the 1931 Hawke's Bay earthquake, and the Tarawera eruption of 1866, and the 8th largest railway disaster in world history. A mass funeral service for unidentified victims was held in Wellington on New Year's Eve, attended by the Duke of Edinburgh. On a different subject, some of you will remember those wonderful children's books, Hutu and Kawa. The iconic red flowers of the New Zealand Christmas tree, Pohutukawa, were brought to life in a series of children's books written and illustrated in the 1950s by Avis Akers. Akers, born Tyra Avis Mary McNeil in Wellington in 1910, began her career as an artist when her family moved to Auckland. Forced to leave school after the collapse of a business venture of her father's, she did some commercial drawing work and studied sketching at night school. Akers and her husband, Bob, moved to Taupo in 1950, and it was there that she invented the flower fairies Hutu and Kawa, inspired by Australian artist May Gibbs' Gumnut Babies, Snuggle Pot and Cuddle Pie. Akers produced a comic strip featuring Hutu and Kawa and their bush friends, such as Willy Wecker, as well as other more European-style pixies and elves, for the New Zealand Herald's children's page for a decade. She also wrote 3 books about their adventures: Hutu and Kawa Find an Island, The Adventures of Hutu and Kawa, in which they ride a kiwi, and Hutu and Kawa Meet Tuatara, in which they help a Tuatara find a new home. Akers also published a book about Opo, the dolphin at Opononi in 1956. Although she wrote no more books, she continued to paint and write about nature for the rest of her life. Akers was a conservationist and a keen observer of nature. The illustrations in the Hutu and Kawa books feature much ecological detail, and the text often carries conservation messages. In Hutu and Kawa Find an Island, for example, the fairies meet their cousin Rata, and the story highlights the impact of possums on native vegetation. Now, on Christmas Day, I'm sure, most of us look forward to a delicious Christmas dinner. And the people who stayed at the Hermitage Hotel at Mount Cook were certainly served a wonderful and sumptuous Christmas dinner on Christmas Day in 1963. The slogan was somewhat ironic at the THC, who had said, "This celebration, who was one of the first at the Tourist Hotel Corporation's new Hermitage Hotel at Mount Cook, where guests were encouraged to enjoy the festivities thousands of feet above worry level," according to its slogan at the time. The previous Hermitage building had been destroyed by fire just after renovations were completed in 1957, and in the same year, storms and torrential rain had seriously disrupted the South Island tourist season. Just 3 years earlier, the THC's Franz Josef Hotel had also burnt down. The first Hermitage, built in 1884, was just a cob hut at the end of a 2-day coach journey from the railway terminus at Fairy in the Mackenzie Basin. After being destroyed by floods, it was replaced by a grander building in 1914, and the Hermitage became a popular destination. Because of its key position as one of the jewels in the crown of the burgeoning tourist industry, after the Hermitage's destruction in 1957, a new hotel was hastily constructed, with builders working 12-hour days in bad weather to enable the hotel to reopen in May 1958. Designed in the modernist style, it was described by British architectural expert Nicholas Pevsner as one of the finest buildings in New Zealand. Now, about that Christmas dinner they were served. In 1963, Christmas guests could enjoy a comprehensive menu of seasonal delights, including traditional dishes such as turkey with cranberry sauce and chipolatas, Canterbury lamb with wild mint jelly, roast suckling pig with cider apple conserve, and poached chicken with albufeira sauce. There were also the cold buffet options of Melton Mowbray pork pie, baked ham, Timaru crayfish in the shell, and pressed ox tongue in aspic, as well as the favourite Kiwi salads of asparagus spears, marinated beetroot, sliced tomato and onion rings, and lettuce and egg with oil mayonnaise. Guests could enjoy Veuve Clicquot Ponsardin champagne and Chateau Neuf du Pape, or McWilliams New Zealand Bacano, one of the first red wines to be produced commercially in the Hawke's Bay. Now, most of us are familiar with the Pohutukawa Carol, written by Willow Mackie. It has an interesting story, this iconic carol, New Zealand carol. The words of the carol were written by Father Ted Forsman, a Catholic priest and Second World War Army chaplain, while on active service in the Libyan desert in late 1941. During the fighting between British and Allied troops and the German Africa Corps led by General Erwin Rommel, Forsman was taken captive with the medical unit to which he was attached. With little food and water and in the middle of a desert battle, Forsman and the six other chaplains worked hard to minister to the wounded until the camp was freed a week later. Despite the extreme conditions, Forsman was moved to write poems about his experiences in battle, and what became the Pohutukawa Carol was one of them. Forsman drew on his memories of the large Pohutukawa trees on his family's land at Pakuranga, Auckland, at what was then called Barn Beach, now Half Moon Bay. The poem was set to music in 1968 by Willow Mackie, a prolific songwriter who is perhaps best known for her carol, Te Hara Nui. Mackie, who died in 2006, specialised in writing folk songs about New Zealand's history, people and events, including Maori legends. She chose to write about New Zealand topics after finding a lack of folk songs about her own country, and produced more than 113 songs, 92 lyrics and a folk opera called The Maori Flute, as well as more than 300 poems. Her version of the Pohutukawa Carol was first performed at the King's School Carol Service, held at St Matthew in the City, Auckland, on December the 8th, 1968. And now let's have a look and see what happened in 1951, when Father Christmas goes to the Chatham Islands. Or Chatham Islands. Christmas came in force to one of New Zealand's most isolated communities in 1951 with the arrival of a red-suited Santa Claus bearing a sack of gifts. More. Duncan Campbell, a reporter with the Evening Post, accompanied an unidentified man dressed as Father Christmas on a trip to the Chathams aboard the Solent flying boat Awatere in December 1951. The visit was arranged by Teal, the forerunner of Air New Zealand, to commemorate a year of flights from Wellington to the islands, previously accessible only by boat. More than 400 people, 80% of the island's population, turned out at Tifanga Lagoon to greet Santa as he came ashore by launch, carting a large sack of toys. Gifts were handed out from beneath two large Christmas trees and from Lucky Dip-style bran tubs set up on the beach. The Evening Post recorded, "In the 3 1/4 hours he distributed good cheer, the islanders, all in paper hats provided by Teal, consumed several bottles of whiskey and soft drinks, numerous cartons of strawberries, 48 dozen chocolate ice creams, 60 dozen ice cream blocks, and 10 gallons of ice cream, estimated to produce 450 ices. The ice cream was donated by a Christchurch firm and carried free by Teal." Before we go, we must listen to the Willow Mackie's Christmas carol, Te Haranui, because it's one that's familiar with most of us. I mean, and the tune is very catchy. Once you hear it, you keep... It's easy to hum it away. And it's a very important, because it's one of few New Zealand carols that we have. So we'll listen to that carol. And Nancy, who unfortunately couldn't be with me today on the program as she is recovering from COVID, but we would both like to wish our listeners a very happy Christmas and all the best for the new year. So that's bye for now from me, Philippa. And I hope you enjoy Willow Mackie's Christmas Carol.
If you enjoyed our program today, listen every second Wednesday of the month at 2:10 p.m. or download us anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/DecoRetro. And we would like to thank our sponsors, Club Moderne, Art Deco Society Auckland. We will keep you informed of all future exciting and glamorous events to be held by Club Moderne. For more information, email judith.moore650@gmail.com. That's judith.moore650@gmail.com. Bye for now.
Your language.